Lieutenant Cloud, did you ever read Frankenstein? He asked.
Never did, Cloud said. I know the story. Saw the most recent movie version not too long ago. The monster talked, which I'm told means it's closer to the actual book than not.
What did you think of it? Jared said.
It was all right, Cloud said. The acting was a little over the top. I felt sorry for the monster, and the Dr. Frankenstein character was something of an asshole.
Why do you ask?
Just curious, Jared said, and nodded toward the seating compartment, which was now almost completely full.
We all read it. Gave us a lot to think about.
Ah, said Cloud.
I see.
Jared, allow me to share with you my philosophy of human beings. It can be summed up in four words. I like good people.
You seem like good people.
I can't say that's all that matters to everyone, but it's what matters to me.
And that's good to know, Jared said.
I think my philosophy runs the same way.
Well, then we're going to get along just fine, Cloud said.
Now, any new jokes?
I might have a few, Jared said.
Chapter 6
We'll talk out loud here, if you don't mind, General Szilard said to Jane Sagan. It makes the waitstaff nervous to see two people staring intently at each other without actually making any sounds. If they don't see we're talking, they'll come over every other minute to see if there's anything we need. It's distracting.
As you wish, Sagan said.
The two of them sat in the general's mess, with Phoenix spinning above them. Sagan stared. Szilard followed her gaze.
It's amazing, isn't it? He said.
It is, Sagan said.
You can see the planet out of any portal on the station, at least some of the time. But no one ever looks, Szilard said. And then you come here and you just can't stop staring at it. I can't, in any event.
He pointed to the crystal dome that encased them.
This dome was a gift, did you know that?
Sagan shook her head.
The Ayla gave it to us as we built this station. It's diamond. This whole thing. They said it was a natural diamond that they carved out of an even larger crystal they hauled up from the core of one of their system's gas giants. The Ayla were amazing engineers, so I've read. The story might even be true.
I'm not familiar with the Ayla, Sagan said.
They're extinct, Szilard said. 150 years ago, they got into a war with the Oban over a colony. They had an army of clones, and the means to make those clones quickly. And for a while, it looked like they were going to beat the Oban. Then the Oban tailored a virus keyed to the clones' genetics. The virus was initially harmless and transmitted by air, like a flu. Our scientists estimated it spread through the entire Ayla-ite army in about a month. And then a month after that, the virus matured and began to attack the cellular reproduction cycle of every single Ayla military clone. The victims literally dissolved.
All at once? Sagan asked.
It took about a month, Szilard said, which is why our scientists estimated it took that long to infect the entire army in the first place. With the Ayla-ite army out of the way, the Oban wiped out the civilian population in short order. It was a fast and brutal genocide. The Oban are not a compassionate species. Now all the Ayla-ite planets are owned by the Oban, and the Colonial Union learned two things. One, clone armies are a very bad idea. Two, stay out of the way of the Oban, which we have done until now.
Sagan nodded. The Special Forces battlecruiser Kite and her crew had recently begun recon and stealth raids in Oban territory to gauge the Oban's strength and response capabilities. It was dangerous work since the Oban were unforgiving of assaults, and technically speaking, the Oban and the Colonial Union were not in a state of hostilities. Knowledge of the Oban-Array-Enishon alliance was a closely guarded secret. The majority of the Colonial Union and the CDF were unaware of the alliance and its threat to humans. The Enishons even maintained a diplomatic presence on Phoenix, in the colonial capital of Phoenix City. Strictly speaking, they were allies.
"Do you want to talk about the Oban raids?" Sagan said.
In addition to being a squad leader on the Kite, she was the ship's intelligence officer, charged with force assessment. Most Special Forces officers held more than one post and also led combat squads. It kept the ship rosters lean, and keeping officers in combat positions appealed to the Special Forces' sense of mission. When you are born to protect humanity, no one is above combat.
Not now, Zillard said. This isn't the place for it. I wanted to talk to you about one of your new soldiers. The Kite has 3 new recruits, and 2 of them will be under you.
Sagan bristled. They will, and that's a problem. I had only 1 hole in my squad, but I have 2 replacements. You took one of my veterans to make room.
Sagan remembered the helpless look on Will Lister's face when his transfer order to the Peregrine came through.
The Peregrine is a new ship, and it needs some experienced hands, Zillard said. I assure you, there are other squad leaders on other ships just as irritated as you. The Kite had to give up one of its veterans, and as it happens, I had a recruit I wanted to place under you. So I had the Peregrine take one of yours.
Sagan opened her mouth to complain again, then thought better of it and clammed up, stewing. Zillard watched the play of emotions on her face. Most Special Forces soldiers would have said the first thing that came into their heads, an artifact of not having social niceties banged into their head through a childhood and adolescence. Sagan's self-control was one of the reasons why she had come to Zillard's attention, that and other factors.
"Which recruit are we talking about?"
Sagan said, finally.
"Jared Durack," Zillard said.
"What's so special about him?" Sagan asked.
"He's got Charles Boutin's brain in him," Zillard said,
and watched again as Sagan fought back an immediate, visceral response.
"And you think this is a good idea?" is what eventually came out of her mouth.
"It gets better," Zillard said,
and sent over Dirac's entire classified file, complete with technical material. Sagan sat silently, digesting the material. Zillard sat, watching the junior officer. After a minute, one of the mess staff approached their table and asked if there was anything they needed. Zillard ordered tea. Sagan ignored the waiter.
"All right, I'll bite," Sagan said,
after she was done examining the file. "Why are you sticking me with a traitor?"
"Boutin's the traitor," Zillard said. "Dirac has just got his brain."
"A brain that you tried to imprint with a traitor's consciousness," Sagan said.
"Yes," Zillard said.
"I submit the question to your attention once more," Sagan said.
"Because you have experience with this sort of thing," Zillard said.
"With traitors?" Sagan asked, confused.
"With unconventional Special Forces members," Zillard said. "You once temporarily had a real-born member of the CDF under your command, John Perry."
Sagan stiffened slightly at the name. Zillard noted it, but chose not to comment.
"He did quite well under you," Zillard said.
This last sentence was a bit of an ironic understatement. During the Battle of Coral, Perry carried Sagan's unconscious and injured body over several hundred meters of battlefield to get her medical attention, and then located a key piece of enemy technology as the building it was in collapsed around him.
"The credit for that goes to Perry, not me," Sagan said.
Zillard sensed another play of emotion from Sagan at Perry's name, but again left it on the table.
"You're too modest," Zillard said,
and paused as the waiter delivered the tea.
"My point is, Dirac is something of a hybrid," he continued. "He's Special Forces, but he may also be something else. I want someone who has experience with something else."
"Something else," Sagan repeated.
"General, am I hearing that you think Boutin's consciousness is actually somewhere inside Dirac?"
"I didn't say that," Zillard said, in a tone that implied that perhaps he had.
Sagan considered this and addressed the implicit rather than the expressed.
"You are aware, of course, that the Kite's next series of missions will have us engaging both the RA and the Yenisha," she said. "The Yenishan missions in particular are ones of great delicacy."
"And ones I needed Will Lister for," Sagan thought, but did not say.
"I am, of course, aware," Zillard agreed, and reached for his tea.
You don't think having someone with a possibly emergent traitorous personality might be a risk? Sagan said. A risk not only to his mission but to others serving with him?
Obviously it's a risk, Szilard said, for which I rely on your experience to deal with. But he may also turn out to be a trove of critical information, which will also need to be dealt with. In addition to everything else, you're an intelligence officer. You're the ideal officer for this soldier.
What did Crick have to say about this? Sagan said, referring to Major Crick, the commanding officer of the Kite.
He didn't have anything to say about it because I haven't told him, Szilard said. This is need-to-know material, and I've decided he doesn't need to know. As far as he knows, he simply has three new soldiers.
I don't like this, Sagan said. I don't like this at all.
I didn't ask you to like it, Szilard said. I'm telling you to deal with it.
He sipped his tea. I don't want him playing a critical role in any of the missions that deal with the RA or the Enisha, Sagan said.
You'll treat him no differently from any other soldier under your command, Szilard said.
Then he could get killed like any other soldier, Sagan said.
Then for your sake, you'd better hope it's not by friendly fire, Szilard said, and set down his cup.
Sagan was silent again. The waiter approached. Szilard impatiently waved him off. I want to show this file to someone, Sagan said, pointing to her head.
It's classified, for obvious reasons, Szilard said. Everyone who needs to know about it already does, and we don't want to spread it around to anyone else. Even Dirac doesn't know about his own history. We want to keep it that way.
You're asking me to take on a soldier who has the capability to be an immense security risk, Sagan said. The least you can do is let me prepare myself. I know a specialist in human brain function and brain pal integration. I think his insights on this could be useful.
Szilard considered this. This is someone you trust, he said.
I can trust him with this, Sagan said.
Do you know his security clearance? Szilard asked.
I do, Sagan said.
Is it high enough for something like this?
Well, Sagan said, that's where things get interesting.
Hello, Lieutenant Sagan,
Administrator Kynan said, in English. The pronunciation was bad, but that was hardly Kynan's fault. His mouth was not well formed for most human languages. Hello, Administrator, Sagan said. You're learning our language.
Yes,
Kynan said.
I have time to learn and little to do.
Kynan pointed to a book written in Chakan, the predominant RA language, nestled next to a PDA.
Only two books here in Chakan. I had choice of language book or religion book. I chose language. Human religion is...
Kynan searched his small store of English words.
Hardar?
Sagan nodded toward the PDA. Now that you have a computer, you should have more reading options.
Yes, Kynan said. Thank you for getting that to me. It makes me happy.
You're welcome, Sagan said. But the computer comes with a price.
I know, Kynan said. I have read files you asked me to read.
And? Sagan said.
I must change to Chakan, Kynan said. My English does not have many words.
All right, Sagan said.
I've looked at the files concerning Private Dirac in depth, Kynan said, in the harsh but rapid consonants of the Chakan language. Charles Boutin was a genius for finding a way to preserve the consciousness wave outside of the brain, and you people are idiots for how you tried to stuff that consciousness back in.
Idiots, Sagan said, and cracked the smallest of smiles, the translation of the word in Chakan coming from a small speaker attached to a lanyard around her neck. Is that your professional assessment, or just an editorial comment?
It's both, Kynan said.
Tell me why, Sagan said. Kynan moved to send files from his PDA to her, but Sagan held up her hand. I don't need the technical details, she said. I just want to know if this Dirac is going to be a danger to my troops and my mission.
All right,
Kynan said, and paused for a moment.